You are now entering the spoiler zone. The following podcast contains explicit plot details and pockets of profanity. You have been warned. The Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in wine and space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss. Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to another edition of the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
And this time we are watching the 2023 Doctor Who Christmas special, The Church on Ruby Road.
Merry Christmas.
I'm the Doctor.
What's up there?
Goblins.
Oh yeah?
Time travelers are great. Like, wow. Ah! Hold on tight.
Who are you?
Long ago, on Christmas Eve, a baby was abandoned in the snow. Today, Ruby Sunday meets the Doctor, goblins, stolen babies, and perhaps the secret of her birth. First broadcast on BBC One on the 25th of December 2023, this was the first full-length outing for Shooty Gatwa as the 15th Doctor. As with all Doctor Whos, we'll be doing a full commentary for the episode. But before we do, it's time for a little drinky. It's time to wave the tonic screwdriver in the general direction of the gin cabinet and see what we've got. And this time we are drinking Gower Sea Star Gin. It's 47%. And the infobollock says the Gower Gin Company, an award-winning Welsh gin distillery, is owned and run by Sian and Andrew Brooks and was voted Industry Choice Distiller in the Gin Guide Awards 2022. After a long career in management consultancy, Andrew is now a full-time distiller. He's passionate about foraging, distilling and creating new recipes. Sian is now involved in the gin business full-time after a career lecturing and teaching French and Spanish. Their micro-distillery is a converted bike shed in the village of Port Einan in Gower, and they have an absolute passion for gin and are constantly developing new recipes based on the botanicals found in Gower. Their aim is to make small-batch craft gin which encapsulates the freshness of the sea and the aromas of the coast and the dunes that surround them. They want to be a strong ambassador for Gower and Wales, which is why they use Welsh names for their gin and have fully bilingual bottles. Sea Star Gin is a fresh coastal gin made with foraged Welsh lava seaweed, lemon balm, bergamot and rich crushed Serbian juniper. Well, we've had a few of those before. They did a Romanta gin, and we've certainly had that. And I think the Pinwood, the Pinewood gin, that was another one of those. And they've all been quite...
Just run that past me again. This Welsh through and through gin has Serbian juniper. Was that right?
It seems to be, yes.
So the most important botanical in the whole of the gin is from Serbia.
Far be it from me to criticise the Welsh. So anyway,
you forced yourself.
Let's have a little sniff test. I can't say as I'm getting a lot out of that.
Very slightly herbal, but only very slightly, and I can pick any specific herb out of it.
Oh, well, eyes down, dive in.
Slightly lemony, but only slightly. That's a bit meh.
I know, I've really been enthused by the previous gins, and I can't get excited by this.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. It's
I can't get a handle on it.
There doesn't seem to be very much to it.
There is a flavour in there. It's struggling to get out, but I can't tell you what it is.
It's a bit citrusy, but only a bit.
There's a slight bitterness on the tongue as an aftertaste.
Only very slight. I think this is all a bit meh and three-worthy.
Yeah, it's three-worthy for me as well. And I feel bad saying that because... Like I say, they have really put the hours into the previous gins, and probably this one as well. It's just not anything special. No, it's definitely middle of the road, I'm afraid. So glass in hand, it's time to wander downstairs into the under gallery here at Podcasting House, and this time we're opening up the Imaginarium. Dr. Exton, you've got something quite special to pull out this time in honour of our new doctor.
In honour of a new doctor and in honour of Christmas, even though we're recording this after Christmas, I think we should have Christmas presents. And what says Christmas to a Doctor Who fan more than a fantasy TARDIS team? So I think we get three fantasy TARDIS teams of canonical characters.
Well, go on, kick us off.
Well, my top fantasy TARDIS team is actually a team that appeared on the telly in Doctor Who, but only for one story. Troughton, Ben and Polly.
Go on, eulogise.
Troughton's my favourite Doctor, Ben and Polly are my favourite companions, the power of the Daleks, in any way that we can experience it, it seems to be a phenomenal story. I would love to see more of that trio. It's not that I dislike Jamie, I thought Jamie's a good companion, but I'd like to have seen more of the three of those before they diluted it.
Yes, heartily agree. Well, my first TARDIS team is another one that only appeared on screen for one story. I'm not entirely sure they qualify as a TARDIS team, but they were bloody good and I wish we'd seen more of them. It's the 12th Doctor, Clara and Perkins, as played by Frank Skinner. Now, Frank Skinner's one of those companions that never were, and he was a really well-written, likeable, well-played character. There was a depth to him, and you can really see him bringing his toolkit and his engineer's cap aboard the TARDIS and being the tinkerer. And I think that there would have been a definite space for that sort of character to carry on. So as far as I'm concerned, that's a wasted opportunity. That would be my first, probably my all-time number one fantasy TARDIS team. What's your second choice?
Well, my second choice of Doctor is a Doctor that only appeared in one story, and it's the War Doctor.
Excellent.
I would team him with Leela.
Yes, I can see that working, actually.
But Leela post-Gallifrey.
So you mean the Leela we've just seen in the Season 15 box set trailer?
No. Actually, possibly.
By post-Gallifrey, do you mean the audio series?
No, because that's not canonical. What I mean is after Leela has been on Gallifrey for a while and acquired a bit of Time Lord savvy.
No, I can see that working. Well, my second TARDIS team is the 4th Doctor with Amelia Rumford and K-9. I have long since championed the older companion. I think Big Finish got it nailed down absolutely spot on with Evelyn Smythe. Evelyn Smythe was only in her 50s. Amelia Rumford, you can sort of guess she was in her mid-60s. I know that we've spoken about this before and that the action sequences might have been a little bit awkward, but then it never bothered Evelyn. It was never a thing. They got around it magnificently with her and the audios. And I don't see any reason why on screen. Her and K-9 were a really lovely little side pairing. And I think that somebody that could out-weird Tom Baker, you can see him in one scene in particular, he's visibly out-eccentriced and he can't deal with it. And it's about the only time on screen that Tom Baker's completely baffled. So, for that reason alone, that will be my second dream team.
Okay, sounds good. My third is going to be a girls' night out. Jodie Whittaker, Ace, and Jo. And I think that trio would just have a barrel load of fun bimbling around the universe.
Ace!
TV series Ace had a real sense of fun about her.
Right! That's come out of left field, as they say, over the pond. But actually, now that you've said it, I can see it.
If you think about other companions who would just go out and have fun, who was there? Susan, possibly, but you never really saw it in her. Vicky could have done. Barbara was sensible rather than fun. Katerina was just shell-shocked. Sarah Kingdom was a bit combat. Dodo could have worked. Polly was a bit too 60s to be in any other era. Victoria was just a bit whingy and wet. Zoe was a bit sensible. Liz Shaw was a bit sensible. We've had Joe. Sarah Jane was excellent and was obviously really good friends with the Doctor, but didn't really come across as a massive sense of fun. Romana did in the later years, but Tegan didn't. Nyssa didn't. Perry could have worked. Oh, I forgot Mel. Yeah, she could work as well, but Jodie Whittaker, Ace and Joe.
Splendid. Well, my final choice is also the War Doctor, but paired with the Professor Yana Master. Delgado is always going to be number one. There's no getting around this. But Derek Jacobi's Master is my second favourite and very, very high up. On screen, we only got an episode of him, and he wasn't the Master for all of that. I know it's not canonical, but we've heard what Derek Jacobi's Master could be like on audio, and we've also had a different slice of that Master trapped aboard the TARDIS in Scream of the Schalke. So I think if we could sort of combine the two, have Derek Jacobi's TV Master locked in the TARDIS, unable to move, with the War Doctor, you'd have basically two grumpy old men from different sides of the coin. I think that could produce some really argumentative TARDIS trips. And I think it, just for a brief period, that could have actually been quite fun. Probably because I am a grumpy old man now, or getting there. So here we are, back in the viewing room, and it's time for Shooty Gatwa's first full adventure, the church on Ruby Road. Without further ado, we're going to run VT.
Once upon a time, late on Christmas Eve, a stranger came to the church on Ruby Road. She carried in her arms the most precious gift of all.
Well, this is nice and sort of Christmas preachy, isn't it? Christmas parable, I suppose we might put it. But
yeah, I quite like the vibe of this already.
And it looks lovely. Unfortunately, the priest looks a little bit like Calvin Robinson, but you can't have everything.
She was never seen again.
What appears to be a woman wandering off in the snow.
A time traveller came to call. A traveller known as the Doctor.
Now, we get into now, the titles.
Yeah. Oh, they're trying very hard, aren't they?
And that's how I got my name. Ruby. Named after Ruby Road. That's where I was found. Almost 19 years ago.
I don't like the logo rotating in like that. It looks very cartoony. And the music's very greatest hits.
Yeah. Yeah, a big step down in the music.
I mean, the problem is we had Segun Akinola's version of the theme, which, as far as I'm concerned, is it the best that we've had? I still like the actual Eccleston Tennant theme. I think that it's got a real arresting vibe about it, and it still now gives me the tingle. But Segun Akinola's version is bloody marvellous. It's way up there with the best.
I think it's the best New Who version, to be honest. Anything coming after it was going to fail by comparison.
It is true, and we've discussed this before. I do think that musically, Segun Akinola, he nudged the series on in a direction. It was a very modern, very almost ethereal feel to it, and I thought it was wonderful. So Murray Gold, I've never had a problem with his music, but now it does feel like a step back. Let's see, though. We're only one episode in. Getting back to what's on screen, we've got Davina McCall in her second Doctor Who outing. She actually as herself this time as an interviewer. We've also got Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday, is it? Ruby Tuesday? Which one is it?
No, Ruby Sunday. Ruby Sunday. Tuesday is the song.
That's the one. From the second she appears on screen, she's clearly got that sparkle behind her eyes and those facial expressions. She's sort of a cross on first impressions between Rose and Clara.
Yes.
More Clara, I would say.
I mean, she's very, very pretty.
Oh, yes, yes. One for the young lads. Ooh. Now, I like that Doctor's outfit. Sort of tweedy suit with a hat on. Very nice. Not sure about the orange fluffy jumper, but hey-o.
And Ruby's Dennis the Menace top, I'm not sure about. But I know fuck all about fashion, so.
Likewise. Not exactly the best critic. Now, I wasn't at all sure about this on first watch. We've got the Doctor in a white T-shirt or a vest top, and a kilt, throwing himself about on the dance floor. It's very undoctorish behaviour. But the way I'm going into this era is, after the way we had the whole bi-generation thing knackered, worn out, it was very much a sort of a rebirth, a revitalisation of the character. So I'm just assuming that he's like a newborn at this point.
Health and safety. Gin and tonic division.
I think that's kind of minimising things, to be honest. Every doctor after regeneration has a fluctuant personality until they settle into what they're going to be. And the Christmas special, when it should be fluffy and a bit fun and a bit silly, is the perfect time to have that. I don't think we're going to be able to tell what his doctor's character and personality is going to be like until we've seen what he's like in the actual series.
Oh, no, I think that's a fair appraisal, yes. I've said all along about Shuti Gatwa, I've deliberately not watched him in anything else. I don't want to go into his era coloured by what I think his portrayal is going to be. I want to be wowed by the man on his own merit. I have to be honest, this is only the second time I've watched this. My first watch of this, I wasn't overly struck. If I'm honest, I think he's a touch on the young side. I think if he'd come to this maybe 10 years later, he would have had...
But you said exactly the same about Matt Smith.
No, I didn't. I've never said that about Matt Smith. I said I went into Matt Smith's era thinking, oh, young pretty boy. I was completely proved wrong in about three scenes with Matt Smith. He had everything about him that it was doctorish, it had the weight and the gravitas. What I've said about Matt Smith is I was dead wrong.
And Shuti Gatwa is coming straight in with a Christmas special, which is going to be light and fluffy and fun. And I really like the way he did light and fluffy and fun. Now, this police blokey, has he been in Doctor Who before?
Not that I remember, no.
Or is he just really quite similar to Andy from Torchwood?
I think he looks really quite similar to Andy from Torchwood, because that was pretty much the character I am in my head as well. I don't think it helps that he's quite... I hesitate to use the word mincy.
I mean, he came over as a bit stompy, but, you know, kilt and big boots makes you stomp. I speak from a degree of experience in this.
Yes.
I really liked him in the kilt. I think he looks great. I liked seeing him leaping up and down on the dance floor.
It's different. It's going to take some getting used to if he's a party animal doctor. It's a different take on the character. Let's see how it goes. What I don't want is more flouncy. We had enough flouncy with Jodie Whittaker and it didn't work. Tell me what's going on right now. There was no gravitas there because there's a lot of bouncing around. Oh, I don't know. Maybe watching it again, I'll recolour my opinion. But so far, I am not blown away by his performance. I don't think it helps that they can't settle on a costume for him. Now, all the promo shots, the initial promo shot was the tweed suit and Doc Martens, and he looked very doctorish. But after that, we've had, I'm sorry to say, the Lenny Henry Doctor in every other publicity shot.
I don't see any harm with the Doctor having different outfits. It's actually a bit more weird for somebody to be wearing the same thing day in, day out, day in, day out. And, you know, the classic era Doctor used to wear different outfits when the occasion called on. Do you remember that great flouncy thing that the first Doctor wore in Reign of Terror?
Oh, no, it does happen. But to have, you know, four or five different outfits in one episode, I think it's part of the Doctor's makeup. Well, it helps you latch on to that
character.
And the
ones that we've seen that are a bit different are the ones in historical episodes. So it's the one with the Beatles and the one with Jane Austen or whoever it is, the Regency. So he has different looks for those historical periods. I'm assuming what she's wearing is fashionable, but it does look like a greatest hits of the 90s.
Again, not the best person to ask about fashion, I know, bugger all. I like her vibrancy. After the whiny, whiny, moany bitch companions we've had for the past 5 years, it's lovely to have somebody like that breeze on screen.
Her makeup's a bit shiny as well.
I think that is the fashion, though, isn't it? They all seem to be a bit shiny and sausage-lip these days, although not that she is.
She kind of looks as though she could do with a layer of powder.
I couldn't possibly comment. She's cool. Come on, get to the best bit. Is it Cherry, the best character in this thing? I loved her.
Oh, and her cup of tea.
Yeah. Is there anything on screen that's as endearing as an old black woman shouting?
On screen, possibly. On a ward at 3 o'clock in the morning, I can guarantee endearing is not the word you would use.
Probably not, yes. But it's the same as a lot of characters on screen. If you met them in real life, you'd probably want to punch them in the face until dead. It's just for a meeting with Mum. Stop bonding. We have, through talking, missed a first on-screen appearance. We've got Anita Dobson in this, who, yeah, all the way through, is a very, very incidental character.
And we'll come on to why she's not an incidental character at the end.
That kitchen's hideous.
I quite like the spangly lights.
Spangly lights, yes, but the rest of it looks like Star Trek from the 60s, and not in a good way.
Not convinced about the Star Trek. Blake 7, perhaps.
It's all orange and yellow.
Okay, Star Maidens.
Behave. See future episode. If you like ABBA and you like space opera and you like Blake 7...
You probably still won't like Star Maidens. Would you, with the sound off, and you might cope. It's nice to hear from you. And she's got one of those cut through her eyebrow things that always look a bit weird. But again, I suppose that whole fashion thing.
Is that an actual cut or is it a scar?
Oh no, loads of people have that.
Oh, do they? Okay. Modern.
There's not a single trace anywhere. I mean, in the whole wide world, my mother's never left a blood sample or anything.
If you could distill Northern Young Person in 2023, that is what you'd get. Because I know dozens of people that are just like her.
You've been having any bad luck recently?
Do you know, just the way the camera pulled down there, it looked like Davina McCall had a massive grey bra on for some reason.
Yes.
The funny thing is, I have been having bad luck recently, but I just keep dropping things.
I mean, that does all sound a bit paranoid.
A torch, and not very Davina McCall either.
I haven't a clue what Davina McCall's like in real life. I mean, she comes across as lovely on the screen, and I've never heard anybody say anything bad about her. Davina? But you can never tell.
You can never tell.
Yes, very nasty kitchen. And for a flat in Notting Hill, that must be setting them back a packet.
Well, yes. She's very Clara.
I think she's got a chunk of ace about her as well.
But hasn't that been levelled at every teenage companion since Ace? That they're just an Ace clone? I can't think of a single companion that hasn't been at least compared in some way to Ace. Sam Jones in the novels, Charlie Pollard in the audios, even Rose when it came back, you know. Was Ace a proto-Rose? And I suppose if you look at it, really, there's only so many different ways that you can portray teenage girl on screen.
What the hell are you doing? Just well, what did you do that for? Who sees a ladder and just pops on a ladder in the sky and you thought, yeah, how could that go, babe?
They've got the baby!
I mean, he comes across as very charismatic, doesn't he?
I think he's going to need to bed into it. I think he's got bags of potential, but he's not there yet. I do actually quite like that long leather coat. I think that it suits him very well. My initial thought was the Lenny Henry Doctor from the sketch.
It suits him. I don't like it because I don't like the colour.
Oh, neither do I. It's certainly nothing I'd go anywhere
style,
near.
All the mass and density of Mavity
exists in the glove, not in you. Oh, this Mavity thing. I wonder how long that's going to go on for. They've planted the seed with that, haven't they? I mean, you have always said that you think that Doctor Who really should be like an explosion in a charity shop. I think he's certainly ticking the bill here, don't you?
Yes. And yes. And that goblin ship is really nicely realised.
Now, it's a Christmas special, and it's always going to be a bit more fluffy and light than a regular episode. So I'm taking all of this with a pinch of salt. Because certainly the early Christmas specials I was never a mad fan of. But already, even though this isn't a standard episode of Doctor Who, it still feels more Doctor Who than anything we had from Chibnall. I don't want to keep twisting that particular knife, but it's inevitable that I'm going to make comparisons this close to the rum.
Yeah.
See, I can't help comparing him to Eddie Murphy in the early Beverly Hills Cop days. I'm glad we got that scar under his eye.
It's going right up into his forehead as well, and I noticed it on the publicity photo. And I was going to say, I quite like the fact that they're not matting the scar out.
I also wish that he'd focus on an accent. Where are we going with this? I'm not the only person to say this, but it was the one thing that leapt out on Christmas Day when I watched it. It's all over the place.
And that has to be deliberate. They are not time travelers. Excuse and it'll be the whole post-regeneration flux finding himself, because it's not like it was in the 60s and 70s. There will be the opportunity for retakes if they didn't like what was going on.
True. Oh, and here we go. The implication that the Doctor has a queer side. I will say this for the umpteenth time. I don't want the Doctor to have that side. There's any number of characters on screen that have got the hints to a sexual past. Gay, straight or other, I couldn't give a toss. That is not the Doctor. Just leave it there. Stop ticking the fanboy boxes. Well, it's like Ruby Sunday. I really hope there's not the slightest vaguest whisper of a hint that she fancies him. Please. I've said many times before, Doctor Who works best as just two mates on adventures. Look at how good the 10th Doctor and Donna were, and the 14th Doctor and Donna. It was just two mates on an adventure. There was no side to it, there was no tension, no underlying... There's any number of characters on TV that have that sexual tension. It's been done. Can we not have Doctor Who that isn't that?
I don't have a problem with it being unrequited like it was with Martha, or realistically it was with Rose up until the very end. So if it's one-sided, yeah, not a problem. Do I have a massive problem with it being eventually reciprocated? To be honest, not that massively, because it's been done. It's there.
The only problem is, it's there as an undercurrent the whole time, and that's the problem. It takes away from the stories if you're semi-concerned with the will-they-won't-they aspect of it. And, or that's even there distracting you in the background, because it takes away from the story.
Or it's part of the story.
It was very skillfully done with the 9th Doctor and 10th Doctor, and it was a different avenue to explore. Brilliant. It was really well done. But then they carried it on. Martha had to fancy him, and then Donna very explicitly didn't. And then Clara came along, and it was sort of there, and Amy was very explicit, and come on, legs open. And then Yaz, oh, got a fancy, and I've turned lesbian, even though there's never been a hint about it. Just park it. Park it.
And Jabba the Hutt.
It's a very good bit of CGI, though, that Goblin King.
I have to be honest, I'm really liking the music.
I understand this was released as a single. You can actually buy this. It's a clever way of telling quite a dark story.
Yeah.
And lining it up for Christmas. Top marks, everyone.
Which is a very pantomime thing to do.
If all the babies are fed straight to the Goblin King, what do the other goblins live off? Rocket Janice!
And again, I really like this bit. It's very pantomime, which is what you want at Christmas. See, I think that was really well done. It was...
Yeah, it benefits from another viewing, to be quite honest, because the first time around I wasn't at all sure. But it does work.
And I'm hoping they get to sing again in the Beatles episode.
Your name is Cherry.
It is.
Cherry Sunday.
Like a tasty treat.
Yes, I'll see you later, Cherry, okay?
Oh, flirty old ladies, it's too much like my day job. I mean, to be fair, the flirty old ladies are quite often quite entertaining, particularly when they do it in front of their family, and you know they're doing it deliberately to wind their family up.
I have to say, though, I've always been exceptionally... Yes.
Well,
they fucking love it. And in answer to that last statement, yes, they do look very pally.
I'm getting a sort of Baker and Slade and Best Friends vibe.
Oh, I really hope so.
With the whole sort of wide-eyed wonder that Tom Baker was able to put into it.
Oh, I think you're imbuing him a little bit further than he possibly has earned so far. But I'm sure people said the same thing about Tom Baker when he first appeared on screen.
Although, the pantomime relief face gurning I could live without. Although, how much of it is because it's pantomime for the Christmas special? It's just a routine
visit, that's all. Not sure, but again, I'm not too keen to tar him with any particular brush for a Christmas special. I think there's been quite a bit so far for what he was in for the last of David Tennant specials and this, of showing him off as the queer the queer eye candy. Because there's no denying he's a very attractive man, and from a TV producer's point of view, why wouldn't you show that off to get the eyes on screen? I just hope that's not what he becomes. There was a
problem, but it's gone now. And, you know, is there a massive difference between Shooty Gatwa being eye candy and Matt Smith being eye candy, or Peter Davison being eye candy?
Again, we're looking through a very different prism, because I've never seen any of the Doctors, even Jodie Whittaker, as eye candy. Now, when it comes to the Companions, there was clearly a definite push, certainly during the 70s and 80s, or half of the 80s, for the eye candy on screen, for the dads or the men. I'm not excusing it, and I'm not actually saying that that was a good thing, because I watched Planet of Fire many times. Not necessarily for the story. I'm not sure that's a good thing. Again, there's any number of programmes where you've got a handsome hero on screen that, you know, there's an underlying sexual tension with. Doctor Who isn't that character.
Or hasn't been. You know, characters change. And the character of the Doctor, by definition, changes.
If there's ever a character that's going to evolve, then surely it should be Doctor Who. I just think that it's a very lazy way of getting the viewers in, because let's take, and I know you're not a big fan, but Sherlock. Now, the reason people watch Sherlock, maybe it wasn't clever, but it was witty, and the central character was this mad, eccentric, very different from all the other lead characters on screen at the time. That was the appeal. And I like that. I like the fact that the central character is just more cerebral. There's something going on that's not your standard handsome hero. It's a very easy route to go down, don't get me wrong. And if you've got a leading man that's as pretty as that, then of course it must be very tempting, but it takes away from what the core of the character is, which is this very cerebral alien who just wants to explore and discover and find out what's going on. If you start diluting it with being just like every other leading man on screen, what's the difference? And that's really why I found Sherlock so damned watchable, because you had this cerebral character, very Doctor Who-like. Might not have been Sherlock Holmes, but it was very Who-like.
I mean, I suppose it was Doctor Who-like. I'm not inextricably opposed to the Doctor having... Oh, there we go. Nail varnish. Simply nail varnish. With the Doctor having a flirty side. I'm not sure I'd want to see it any more physical than that. But the Doctor hasn't been afraid of flirting to get his way. I mean, look at the Aztecs. Hartnell was flirting like mad.
Hmm.
Now, it just so happened that his flirting got him engaged. a lot of the time, it didn't really happen, because for a lot of the 60s and 70s, there really weren't very many female guest stars.
Can you really see Pertwee's Doctor flirting? Can you realistically see Tom Baker's Doctor flirting?
Oh, God, yes. Pertwee, I'll grant you, he's a bit angry Tory. But Tom Baker. Definitely.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it would be a bit student and cack-handed, but yes, definitely.
Well, I mean, the obvious scene that leaps to mind is Madame Scarlione.
Oh, You're a Beautiful Woman, probably.
Yeah. And that's the nearest he gets to it, but...
But you've got... Davison and Todd in Kinder.
I agree, but it's flirting in a very cerebral way if you watch those two.
Yeah, but television was a lot more sanitized in those days, and it was seen as a kids' TV program, whereas now it's seen more as a family TV program.
There's certain aspects of the flirting that I just think are very, very well done because they're so cack-handed. Cack-handed is a very good way of putting it, actually. The Ninth Doctor with Linda Moss on Satellite 5 at the end. I might come with you. Well, I might invite you. That's that sort of thing. It was all very clumsy. This doctor finding out that there's actually a different way of talking to people. It was all very clumsily done. And then you've got the 11th Doctor who, you know, he's trying to get Rory and Amy together in the alternate reality. You know, you should talk to her about texting and scones. Doesn't really get it. To have a doctor that's suddenly... overtly, semi-sexually flirting. I don't like it. The cack-handed flirting, carry on. Love that. I think it's very Doctor Who. The subtext that he's been this sort of Lothario at times. Let it go. Let it go. It's lazy. Any number of characters have done this.
Any number of the Who characters have run around the universe saving planets, but that doesn't mean that we should stop doing it because it's been done before. I don't have a problem with it being a part of the Doctor's character.
No, but the whole asexuality of Doctor Who is part of the thing that sets him, stroke her, they, whatever, apart.
It has been. It doesn't mean it always has to be.
No, but if you break down that barrier, you get rid of effectively the last thing that differentiates him or her from every other bloody hero on screen. Of course, every other hero on screen is going to have... to cut across myself here. I do love that they've kept Jodie Whittaker's TARDIS. I'm quite fond of that, I've got to be honest. I quite like this whole anti-gravity glove thing. A MacGuffin that he thought might be a good idea and so he's invented it.
Yes, and hopefully there'll be all sorts of other weird shit invention stuff.
That church spire stabbing the Goblin King... that's quite graphic for modern Doctor Who. It tends to shy away from that sort of thing.
And I don't get why the goblins just vanish.
Neither do I.
As if they're sort of being written out of time. Unless this is something that's going to come along in a future storyline. Or it's a Christmas episode and we just don't delve into it too deeply. I vaguely like the sort of pseudo-choir thing. Vaguely. I wouldn't want to see too much of it. Or hear too much of it. But it works quite well for a Christmas thing.
So basically...
And Calvin's back.
The baby that was given to them on Christmas Eve in the future becomes Ruby in the past. That's the implication, isn't it?
No, because the baby that was given to them on Christmas Eve is a different colour to Ruby.
Oh, yeah. Mysterious woman walking off in the snow. I can't think that she's going to become important later in the series. Right, new sonic screwdriver, what do we think? It's not really a screwdriver, is it?
Game controller.
Yeah, Sky remote.
And looking more and more and more like a tricorder with each iteration.
It is true. I did quite like the 14th Doctor's sonic screwdriver.
That's not really flirting, that's just coming across as a bit over-familiar.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Yes, over-familiar, yeah. See, how did he know that that was happening?
Merry Christmas.
Tomorrow's Times.
But this is my problem with not following Jodie Whittaker with Shooty Gat, where in between you've had David Tennant. Now, I've never been the greatest David Tennant fan. I think he was brilliant, but he's never been the best New Who Doctor. The problem is, when he came back as 14, he'd got that gravitas of another 10 years of age. So he was all that 10 was, plus that weight of age, plus he's an amazing actor. Anything coming after David Tennant has to really pull out all the stops. And I think it's actually diminished Shooty Gatwa.
I don't think it has. I think, recognising that the Whittaker era didn't work, no disrespect to her, it's all down to production team, but they needed something to grab the audience's attention, and they could either go with Shooty Gatwa and let him build it up organically, or they could go for a real event. David Tennant and Catherine Tate coming back, going back to the glory days of New Who, was an event, and it was a 3-episode event, which may not have been the greatest stories ever, but it rekindled people's interest to be able to go into this without coming from their meh Whittaker era, but instead coming from, actually, we've just had some Doctor Who that we've really enjoyed and we want to see more, especially after how terrible their publicity machine had been during the Chibnall era. It went from something people weren't particularly interested in and didn't hear an awful lot about to something that was seen as an event and people were hearing loads about, and it came back and there was all this sort of ceremony about it. I think it was quite an inspired move to have David Tennant come back.
Oh, from a commercial point of view, I can completely understand the rationale.
And from a story point of view and a publicity point of view, I think it worked on all levels. And it gives Shooty Gatwa a level playing field to go into.
Oh,
she's giving me quite
what
an Elizabeth Sladen vibe.
I hope so.
I'm really very enthused by her. I thought she came across as sort of pretty soap actress. And she's a pretty soap actress. But I think she's got more about her than that.
Well, is it any different to Billy Piper, teeny bopper, and then you actually see her on screen?
Yeah, absolutely.
But in the background there, you've got Anita Dobson. She's clearly coming back. What is she?
We'll come on to that in a second.
And I love the TARDIS. First TARDIS I've genuinely loved since the series came back, if I'm honest.
Who are you?
Oh, no, I like Capaldi's.
True, I did like... No, that's unfair. I really did like Capaldi's, but I think that this has a real classic TARDIS feel to it.
And honestly, for all I didn't like the character or what she represented, I really like Jo Martin's TARDIS, that real hark back to the very early days.
Absolutely, yes. Typical Chibnall, though, setting up something that you're not going to resolve.
Never seen a TARDIS before.
You know,
you see,
I've always said
that
about
bit and the little wink to camera.
Oh, but do you know how I've always said about an older woman being the Doctor with that? Or the weight that comes with being that age and then not giving a shit. Now, I don't know how old Anita Dobson is. In my head, she's still sort of... as she was. It's just sort of a cough and a stutter from being Angie Watts to where she is now. But she's got that weight to her now that I think if she was given some meaty, baddie part, I don't know what she's going to turn out to be, but whatever it is, I'm just delighted to see her back. I mean, she might even turn out to be a version of the Curator. Who knows?
So what do you think she might turn out to be?
Well, she's either going to turn out to be some villain behind the scenes pulling the strings, or someone we've met before, probably many years ago, or a completely new character. But I think either way, she's going to be a very powerful figure. I don't think she's just going to be this background part.
To be fair, that said spectacularly nothing.
What do you mean? Who specifically do I think she'll turn out to be? My gut feeling is actually she's going to turn out to be the series arc villain.
Okay.
The whole Mavity thing has been planted. That's clearly going to be a thing. But this is what I like about Russell T. Davies's writing. I will give both him and Stephen Moffat the same kudos, that they plant seeds. They're not important. They're not in any way integral to enjoying a particular episode. They are just there being woven in the background. It was something that Chibnall never had. Russell T. Davies, I know, will pull this off and it'll be very satisfying in the end, as he always did with every series. Every series did involve a sky full of Daleks and then a massive Deus Ex and a reset of time. Let's hope that that's not what this series will be. However, a very clever man, very clever writer, whatever other flaws there are, I have complete faith.
Yeah, and I think whatever we come up with is probably not going to be entirely right.
Or wrong, as I suspect most of us are going to be. I will give Russell T. Davies this much. Every single fan theory I ever saw during his initial run turned out to be completely and utterly wrong.
Okay, well, I'm going to throw two fan theories into this.
Mm-hmm.
First, and I think least likely, Susan.
Oh, no. If you're going to bring Susan back, you'd bring Carol Ann Ford, wouldn't you?
Or would you bring back somebody who can act? Because really, other than fans, who's going to know the fact that it's not Carol Ann Ford? What people will notice is that you've got somebody in a major flagship drama who can't act. So, no, I don't think they would bring back Carol Ann Ford. It will be, this is a regeneration of Susan or whatever. But no, what I think she's more likely to be is the woman who leaves Ruby at the church and is involved in whatever backstory there is going on with Ruby and knows about the Doctor and the TARDIS and all of that from interacting with them a couple of decades previously. I think that's what she's most likely to turn out to be.
I'm unwilling to pin any sort of colours to the mast on this.
Because, I've noticed.
Well, largely because there's still that big part of me that doesn't want to work it out. Those days are long gone. In 20 years ago, I probably would have been poring over this, 30 years ago certainly, to try and work it out and decipher the mystery. Now, I just want to be surprised. And trying to unpick that level of mystery, it inevitably leads to disappointment.
No, but we're bound to have ideas to start with. I'm not going to invest any more sort of time or effort thinking about it or trying to pick out clues as we're going along. I'm inevitably going to try and pick out clues as we go along.
Overall, what did we think about this episode?
I enjoyed it. I think it was a good, entertaining Christmas episode. I loved the musical pantomime interludes in the middle. Both of them can sing, and I hope they get to sing again during the Beatles episode. I suspect that they will, but we'll wait for that. The story wasn't up to much. It's got holes in the plot. It's a Christmas episode. Christmas episodes have holes in the plot. It's not what we watch them for.
Christmas episodes are just, they're a sidestep, really. They're never going to be the most serious high drama because they're Christmas Day fluff. I don't think that it's the best day to introduce a new Doctor. It didn't give David Tennant the pow start that he deserved. I don't think that it's given Shooty Gatwa the power start that he deserved. I think the Christmas special would have been better as David Tennant's second swan song and then a serious opening. That said, I enjoyed it. I did not enjoy it on Christmas Day, I've got to be honest. I thought there was a lot of box ticking going on in it. I didn't particularly care for Shooty Gatwa's performance. On second watch, I've revised that opinion up a little bit. But only a little bit. I am yet to be convinced. So I go into the series with genuinely high hopes. I don't think that the next series is going to be a dog in the same way that the whole of Jodie Whittaker's era was. I really don't like saying that because I don't think she was given chance to shine. I really wanted her to be part of the 60th and she wasn't. I just think we've not seen the best of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor yet, and it's probably going to come on bloody audio, which is a shame. But bottom line, no, new era, new Doctor, let's wait till March when it starts again. I'll reappraise it then properly. But otherwise, it was an entertaining bit of fluff. It wasn't entirely unenjoyable. You miserable bastard.
I did enjoy it. It was fun. I thought it had nice Christmas fluff bits. I thought underlying all of that, there was an interesting, if not perfectly realized story. I think it leaves things open to be explored. The new Doctor has a lot of potential. The one who I was really blown away by was Millie Gibson. I thought she put in a fantastic performance.
Absolutely.
Judy Gatwell was pantomime, and it was a Christmas pantomime, but she had a real depth to her performance that I really, really enjoyed. Parts of her performance reminded me of Liz Sladen.
Yes, and I'm hoping we get that dynamic on screen. Fingers crossed. And so with this episode, we finish our protracted 60th anniversary mini-season to celebrate Doctor Who in all its forms. We hope you've enjoyed the ride. For the next few episodes, we'll be collaborating with other podcasters.
Yes, and our next mini-series, some of the episodes have been recorded quite a long time ago, so we actually have no idea what we said, and our guests have probably forgotten all about it anyway. So
it'll be a surprise to everyone involved. Until next time, thanks everyone. Ta-ta.
Bye now.
The Exton-Moss experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.